let the universe know what you're looking to achieve, and good luck. You can keep that to yourself for a very long time.
Yeah, exactly.
So you need to be accountable to co-creating with your spirit guide.
That's it. It's a collaboration.
Welcome to Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency. I'm Maury Fontanez.
And I'm Melissa Grushka.
And today we have the most special guest. Ainsley MacLeod is joining us to talk about all things past life and spirit guides. Bean, are you ready for this?
Beyond ready.
Hey, Signal listeners, before we get into this week's episode, I have something personal to share that I wanted to take a minute and just talk to you about. For those of you that have been listening to our podcast, you know that I have written a book, and I am so, so, so excited to share that this book is finally available for pre-sale on Amazon and Target.com and several other places. My book is called Higher Self, Reclaiming the Power of Your Intuition. And it is all of my coaching methodology, but also very much a personal memoir about my own life and how I realized that I had the intuitive gifts that I had and all of the highs and lows that I've navigated that have really allowed me to create the method that's been so life-changing for so many people. And this has been truly a labor of love for the past 2 years, and the book is finally, finally available for pre-order. If you can take just a minute and visit any of the links that we are going to put in the show notes to put in your pre-order, it helps this book so much when it finally comes out in March. It makes the publishers feel so good about how much people want to hear this message, which allows us to print even more copies and distributors to be even more excited to carry the book. So truly, your pre-orders make all the difference. Again, those links will be in the show notes. And thank you so much for your support. On with the show. Hey, listeners, just a quick content warning that this episode does mention suicide and instances of abuse. Hi, we're here. We're here with Ainsley. Ainsley, welcome to the show.
Great to be on the show. Thank you so much for having me.
We were fangirling. Fangirling left and right. He's so embarrassed that we're fangirling so hard.
We're making Ainsley blush right off the bat.
Yes. Yeah, Ainsley, absolutely.
I do want to talk about my connection to this as we make this introduction. So Ainsley's a past life psychic and spiritual teacher. He's also a prolific author and has written a book that I read called The Instruction. It is the most clear, concise articulation of what the heck our souls are doing on this planet over and over and over again. And so that book was life-changing to me, and I reached out to get a reading with Ainsley. Ainsley's very difficult to get a reading with because his work is so transformative. And so after being on the wait list for a while, I got the call that Ainsley had time, and we had, Ainsley, such an incredible reading. And I want to tell you this. You got on the phone. I didn't tell you this, but the night before our reading, I was so excited to talk to you. I couldn't fall asleep. And I heard my spirit guides, which I'm able to be in dialogue with, say, listen, just put a question out there into the universe and go to sleep. And so I asked, and this was, I don't know, 10 years ago, will I write a book? And went to sleep. And we got on the call the next day. And before you even said anything, you said, this is so weird, but I just have to tell you, it's been coming through loud and clear that one of your purposes in this lifetime is to be an author. You said it right away.
Oh.
I know.
And you're so good at this.
I'm good, aren't I?
You should do this for a living.
I should do. Yeah.
And my book comes out in March, by the way.
Oh, so, congratulations.
Yes.
That is wonderful.
Thank you for that validation. It really was life-changing. So anyway, we have been so excited to bring Ainsley on and talk to him about everything that he has to teach. And I'll stop talking and just say, welcome to the show. And it's really nice to have you.
Well, it really is great to be on the show. And I love talking about what's my favorite subject. You know, it's endlessly fascinating. You know, I thought there was, you know, I wondered if there would be some point in my career that I'd burn out or get tired of talking to people. And no, it's actually, I think actually even the more time's gone on, the more I look forward to every session and kind of what's coming up. And
Wow.
For about 10 years, I mean, before I talk to somebody for the first time, I get a significant past life of theirs. So then I can talk about that a little bit like the way I would have, you know, maybe got a heads up about you writing.
Yeah.
But I get a whole past life. And that's been absolutely fascinating because it's then seeing how, I mean, I have no idea when I get it, how it's going to relate to what's going to come up when actually meet the person. But it always fits perfectly. You see why the spirit guides would have chosen that particular past life to talk about. It sort of relates directly to what they're dealing with now. And that's the whole purpose of, you know, doing that. It's really to get healing and purpose and all of that. For example, with the writing, you know, many more people are here to write than kind of know it. But we sometimes I think we lose the enthusiasm at school or whatever when we're forced to do it or having to write reports at work or technical manuals or whatever we have to do. And sometimes, it just takes the fun out of it. But that's it's a very much encouraged thing. As a lot of people have past lives as a writer that they can tap into. All talents are past life related. So we can dig into past lives. You actually sort of create almost like a conduit from this incarnation to a past one. You can draw the talents and the energy. You can kind of accentuate the talents.
Wow. So every talent has existed in a past life and we're able to tap into that talent in this life. Okay. Listen, we want to ask you a million questions. I'm going to start from the beginning. I would love for you, for those of our listeners who have not read your books and not familiar with your work, can you give us just a 2-minute primer on how did you even realize that you can connect to past lives and connect to spirit guides? How did you begin on this journey?
Well, I was obviously psychic from birth, but I didn't know it. Weird things would happen. I know weird things, but I never, you know, growing up, I never thought for one second that I was psychic. It just never crossed my mind. And, you know, nobody ever said, you know, oh gosh, that's a psychic thing you're experiencing. And I actually was a real non-believer, you know, in anything kind of, well, certainly religious, but spiritual as well. Like a lot of people, I threw the spiritual baby out with the religious bathwater.
Yeah.
Oh. And but the weirdest thing was that I always had psychics telling me that I was psychic and should be doing something with it, even through other people. They, you know, a friend would go to see a psychic. I go, how was it? Well, actually, they mentioned you.
Wow. No way.
Yeah, I used to drive but driving around London in a 1947 Chevrolet Fleetline Aero sedan, huge 40s yank tank, as they call it there.
Wow.
And I remember a friend saying, the psychic said, oh, you know, your friend with a big black American car. It's like,
wow. No way.
And even a couple of times that I had somebody come up to me in the London pub and say, my spirit guides tell me you should be doing what I do on a psychic. And I just, you know, I was with a friend both times and sort of went, well, that was weird. And
how old are you when this is happening? You're getting,
I would have been in my, that was probably early 30s.
Okay.
A recent discovery of yours.
How old do you think I am?
Because you can only be 35, right?
Yeah, I know.
No, I just mean this isn't,
it was just last year.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I was just saying, because I think that you usually think when someone's as skilled as you that they have known it from the minute they were born, they've been practicing and evolving.
No, I mean, the sensitivity that you require for this sort of work is very, it's difficult. And, you know, I found it hard as a guy, you know, being so sensitive and feeling everything. So, you know, I just shut it down, really. I lived a life of noise and chaos and just busyness. You know, I was a freelance illustrator, so I was and really busy. You know, I was, you know, working all hours, and I was also playing in bands and dating and all. You know, it was a busy, busy life, and I think it was just I was, you know, trying to numb out in a way. And, because it could be quite uncomfortable at times. And the big thing for me was, years later, it was in my early 40s, I had a couple of big epiphanies. One was when I heard the voice of a psychic that I'd actually seen in Brighton in England, maybe 10 years before. And that would have been 5 years before I came to the States. And he said to me, "You're going to end up in California." And I went, "Oh, shit, no, I don't want to do that." Well, I changed my mind when I got there, but I'd been there once, you know, years before, and I didn't really like it, but it was more about the company I was with. And so I was going, "Oh, God, no." And he's going, "There's nothing you can do about it, nothing." So I actually ended up on the West Coast. First night there, I think, you know, shit, I need to meditate. You know, my life had been so stressful.
Right.
And my hands were literally shaking. I go, "Okay, I need to meditate." The moment I closed my eyes, I heard the voice of the psychic again. I mean, like in the room. It was really weird, not in my head.
Wow.
And that kind of got my attention. You know?
Right.
That was a huge wake-up call. I went out the next day and bought like 20 spiritual books to try and figure out. I mean, I'm going like, holy cow. How, you know, I didn't do anything to make it happen or to, you know, fulfill wow. this prophecy or whatever. It was just various circumstances led to it.
Right.
And that was the first big epiphany. I really wanted to learn, you know, how can a psychic do that? How does it work, you know?
And did he have a message for you in that when you heard his voice? Was it a specific?
No, on that occasion, that was all it was. It was just a voice saying, "You're going to end up in California. There's nothing you can do about it."
Oh,
and that was all, you know. And but I mean, I needed the wake up call. I mean, as it turned out, the universe had been trying to whack me across the back of the head with with a club for like the longest time, because I really wasn't paying attention. You know, that was what the whole thing about. I mean, I met a psychic lady in Gatwick Airport, and she's going, "Oh, you know, I'm a psychic and you're a psychic and you should be doing something with it." And I'm going, "I don't even know how to get started." Very nice lady and everything. But then the thing that really got me into doing the work was, I tell this story all the time, but it was so fundamental. I mean, for me, it was even more amazing than hearing the voice of the psychic. It was on a trip to Hawaii. I was in a bookstore and I wandered around a little bit, and I felt sort of otherworldly. It was a weird day. I knew I was kind of going, "I feel very strange." And then I kind of turned a corner by some books and I ran into my uncle, which was extraordinary because he'd been dead for 10 years at that point.
Oh no.
And he had a very clear message. He was only there for like a second. It was really fast, but very real. It was like, I've often described it as more real than I would have imagined him.
And, like, you saw him. It was as if
totally. He was just like there, about 18 inches away on my right hand side, and but it was a much longer message, and it was all about working together. It actually followed a session that I'd done with a psychic, and she had said, "Oh, your Uncle John's here." Now, I'd had a couple of psychics mention my Uncle John. The guy in Brighton in England, he'd done it. But the skeptic in me was going, everybody's got an Uncle John, and it's a common name, you know, so I didn't put much store in it. I mean, I wish I'd paid more attention now. But, the psychic said, "Oh, your Uncle John's here, he wants to work with you." But he was like a dyed-in-the-wool atheist, and, you know, I couldn't picture him as a spirit guide. I wasn't even sure I believed in spirit guides.
Yeah.
But he said he wanted to work with me. So when I went back to the mainland, I was living in a very tranquil place, a houseboat in Sausalito, California.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was very silent at night. And I remember just sitting there and going, "Okay, well, let's see if it works." So I'm kind of going, "All right, John, you're there." And he was.
Wow.
We had this very, very stilted conversation. It was such hard going in the early days, so slow. I'd never have had a career, but then I ended up. He very quickly passed me over to spirit guides that I work with now, and it was on a sort of different level of frequency or communication or dimension or whatever.
Do you think that was because you needed to learn to trust what was happening so that you could hear it more frequently?
I think it was a big trust issue. You know, I know it was sort of the weirdest thing that being so skeptical and also so drawn to psychics.
Yes, that's like that's how I am.
Yes,
so skeptical, yeah. But I'm so fascinated and drawn to it, I can't stop myself.
Yeah, that's exactly how I was. You know, it just didn't seem to make sense. You know, like
yes, Exactly.
So you got handed over to your spirit guides, and then you have channeled quite a clear system for our soul. Can you give our listeners an overview of, and the instruction? I couldn't recommend it more highly. It is so well written and so clear, but tell us a little bit about what you channeled from those guides around soul ages and soul types and how that all helps us feel more clear about our purpose here.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, the funny thing is about the instruction, which is a system for understanding who you are, why you're here, is that my brain doesn't work like that. You know, people say to me that your book is so well organized or whatever. I go, yeah, I have spirit guides. It's like, I mean, I'm ADHD. I'm all over the place. I'm a creator soul type. I mean, I mean, focus. And we don't have a relationship at all. So you know, I just I have spirit guides, and so they shut down this one time, and they said we're going to take a break for a few days. And I was going, this is really weird. And it was a little, because once you start working with spirit guides, you get kind of used to having them around. It's like having a pet or a,
support. Yeah.
Yeah. It was actually the same feeling. I'm just realizing same feeling when my cat went missing for a couple of days one time. And you know, the place feels empty. You're missing something. But my guide said, okay, we're going to give you, I forget what it was now, 4 or 5 days or something. And then they came back and they had this system that they wanted to talk to me. They had sort of changed a little bit, and they, you know, we want to talk to you about this thing, you know, the system.
Sorry, when you say they've changed, do you mean other spirit guides had come in, or your spirit guides had shifted?
My spirit guides, it's basically some other guides that are more appropriate for passing on this message.
Yeah. I didn't even know that new spirit guides come and go. I thought it was you get a set and that's what you're working with.
You get what you need. I mean, you know, what I always say is, like, if you're sitting an exam tomorrow, you probably get some very cerebral guides. And if you're, I don't know, if you're in the Olympics tomorrow, you're going to get some that are more in the body or helping you with being more competitive or something. Yeah, so you'll get what you need in the moment. So I downloaded this, as, you know, basically channeled this system. It took quite a while.
How long? And,
well, it was a couple of weeks.
It's not that bad for a whole book.
it was just the outline. You know, it was basically just, you know, you break things down like soul age, soul type. There's 10 elements in each, just for convenience. There's nothing magical about the number. And it was, even that was kind of interesting, because, you know, the spirit guides would sometimes give me stuff. They wouldn't give me, you know, how the system, you know, I might say that if you have a desire for safety and, you know, the negative aspect of that could be inertia. But when I was channeling it, it wasn't like the spirit guides would necessarily give me the word inertia. They might say something, might be a longer sentence. And then I'm sitting there with a thesaurus and going, well, how about this? And they go, eh, no, not really. How about inertia? Yeah, that's good. You know. So it was a little bit of a weird collaborative thing. Other times, because they would talk about things like the negative and positive aspects of all these elements, they call the risk and advantage. I would never have called it that. And I had arguments. I said, this sounds like financial stuff. I was like, I don't know. It just sounds weird. But they were absolutely insistent. No, that's what we call it. You know, so it was a discussion. And then, you know, once I had that, it was just a question of finding examples and showing how this worked based on, you know, what my working with my clients. So I immediately started using the system. And it's I use it now. I mean, it's not all, you know, but it gives a sort of foundation to what I do. So when I'm working with somebody, as you know, Maury, I look at your soul age. You know, well, we know your soul age, Melissa. You're up there as well. You're a total senior citizen.
And what is it?
I've
been dying to know, and I could guess what I am, but I'm not positive.
Okay, well, I'll tell you, see how close it is. You're exactly halfway through level 10, 50% into level 10.
You're kidding. I got the chills. I thought I was a 9, like an early 9.
You know why you think you're 9? Is because you're a spiritualist soul type. And it's so analogous. Yeah, but you're actually a bit older than that. And the interesting thing is you're 50% into level 10. And that pushes you a little bit more out into the world, even like, you know, what you're doing right now.
What does that mean?
But, you know, I always think of 50 percenters as being able to they're like able to walk around amongst the Muggles without being recognized.
Yes, that's so her.
Wait,
so that our listeners, I don't want to get ahead of our listeners. Can you explain soul ages just quickly? Yes. In the instruction, you talk about younger souls and older souls, 10 being the oldest. Can you just explain that system briefly?
Well, reincarnation explains everything, as I always say. I mean, and I've said many, many times to people and at live events, challenge me, give me any example, anything about we humans, I'll relate it to past lives. Everything is really, reincarnation truly explains everything.
I'm going to stump
and part
you.
Of this,
yep. Just kidding.
Okay, so you have 10 levels you want to get through from life number one to life, last life would probably be life 110, 120, sort of up in that sort of region. Although it's hard with infant mortality and so on to determine just exactly how many lifetimes you've had. But I can, you know, using the percentages, I get a gist of it. So the people I work with are very old souls. That means they've been, you know, on this going back and forth between the physical plane and the astral plane for maybe 5,000-7,000 years, depending. We're all, some are slow learners, some get it quickly. And most of the people I work with are going to be level 8, 9, and 10. They're older souls. The journey takes you from a place of me to we, or, you know, it's different ways you can think of it. Like, the older the soul, the more you realize we're all connected, and you lose the sort of, you know, younger souls tend to see what divides us. Mm. I mean, you see it politically. I mean, what we see as a left-right divide is really young soul and old soul.
That was going to be our main question for you. So I'm so glad we went there. So younger soul, though, what you talk about is it's not necessarily hierarchical. It's about how much experience they've had.
Yeah, that's all.
Embodied.
Yeah.
That aspect of it, when we were talking about the younger souls, I was briefly going through everything. It gave me a little sense of calm around this upcoming election that has me completely out of my mind, understanding the side that I don't agree with as being more younger souls. It almost makes it more relatable because it feels so unrelatable to me in this current state. But reading that, I was like, oh, you know, it's just their experience.
Well, and Ainsley, you've said older souls are more connected to the collective consciousness. When you're a younger soul, what might that look like behaviorally? What are you craving in your embodied experience?
Well, you can see it, politically in the States right now. I mean, we're in this run up to the election. I don't know when you're going to be airing this broadcast, but you know,
it will be right before.
Okay,
in the coming weeks. Yes.
Yeah. So you've got old souls like us, you know, look at somebody like Trump and go, how the hell does anybody look at this wanker and think that he could run a fucking, sorry, am I allowed to swear on here?
Yes, oh, please.
I have Trump Tourette syndrome. Every time I mention his name, I end up swearing. It's like,
I
can't
have
stop
the same
myself.
Problem.
Yeah, a lot of old souls are driven nuts by that, you know, because
nuts.
I mean, the guy is, he's a traitor. He's a rapist. He's a racist. Yep. He's an abuser. He's a horrible human being. Horrible. He falls down on every one of the core values that old souls are seeking to embody: peace, truth, love, understanding, all of those things. 100%. He's got no decency, no humanity. He's a sociopath. He's a narcissist and sociopath. He thinks only of himself, but the young souls can't see through it.
So what do they see? What gives them?
What's
we ask you Trump's soul age?
Yeah, he's level 5. He's right in the middle. A lot of level 5 souls are really drawn to power, and they also have an arrogance. You know, that they feel their ways the right way, and they don't have the humility or the introspection. Even that's one of the big differences between young soul and old, is the ability to look within. So you know, you wouldn't find Donald Trump lying awake at night going, oh gosh, did I do the right thing? And, you know, I'm worried about, you know, hurting people, or, you know, did I offend somebody? He's not going to give a toss about that. So it is very disturbing for old souls to see that and not understand how, you know, what on earth makes somebody vote for somebody like that?
And but what is he, it?
he makes people feel powerful. First of all, it's a simplistic message for people who aren't necessarily very sophisticated in their, you know, in their awareness. I mean, that's part of the problem of being a young soul. It's just a little kind of naivety and the inability to see through people like that. It's a guilelessness that comes from this lack of experience. But also what they like is the, you know, when we see him as old souls, when we see him telling his followers to, you know, punch the daylights out of anyone who's protesting or whatever like that, yeah, we're horrified. But that makes them feel powerful. Like, yeah, he's strong, and it makes us feel strong. It's always that identification that young souls have with the leader. As long as that leader, you know, I put this in my first book, doesn't have to share the values, but as long as they think he does. It's the guy who comes to town and wants to build a monorail, you know, and gets everybody sort of fired up, and he knows how to work them. You know, it's that kind of mentality. Everybody, oh yeah, it's great. The young souls see that, well, because they see the differences, they need somebody to beat up on. They need somebody to hate. He's giving them permission to do that. You know, immigrants, trans people, and so on. And that's always happened. You know, like there's always, I even put this, I think, in either my first or second book, it was about all those people that the young souls have hated through history. It's always, communists, black people, Chinese people, whatever it is. Usually they're a marginalized minority. They can't fight back. So this is basic bullying, you know.
You're right.
But I mean, I have a trans son, and he's not safe. Going places. Right. We were talking a couple of years ago when I was going to go to college with him about driving across the country, and then we decided not to because it was just it's not safe. I mean, going through Idaho or somewhere like that.
That's a lot of
young souls, a lot of bigotry as a result, you know. And he's not to beat up on all young souls because not all young souls do that. But the more the heart chakra is blocked, and it's more likely to be in younger souls. The more you get this sense of them and us.
And what are they craving, Ainsley? What is a young soul needing that attracts them to this kind of authoritarian
power? A feeling of empowerment. Yeah, that would be a really sort of very big thing. Also, the religious thing, the sort of, you know, Christian thing. I mean, that. I mean, again, to us, it would seem utterly absurd that you get these conservative Christians looking to this guy who's probably never put his foot in a church in his life, and certainly he doesn't embody any of the qualities that you would associate with Christ. But then again, so many of his followers don't either.
Even people who are this blew me away in your book. You talked about how people who are really drawn to organized religion tend to be younger souls because it helps them make sense of their experience on this planet and give them a sense of safety around this is right, this is wrong. So you even said, for example, Mother Teresa, I think you said, is a level three,
I think she was.
Level three soul. Can you explain that? Because it really helped me understand, this really is a non-judgmental system. It's, again, not a hierarchy.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's just, you know, you are what you are with this. And, you know, I used her as an example to say that, now I know she's very flawed. I mean, Christopher Hitchens wrote a great book about her. She was a very, very flawed human being. She wasn't a saint or anything. But she was, to some extent, maybe, I was an example. Like, here's somebody trying to do some good work. I mean, whether she's successful or not, I don't know. But things that you'd associate with an older soul, you know, being, you know, healing and wanting to help and so on. But she did it. The point I was making was she did it as a younger soul and a younger soul hunter, soul type. So she was on a mission from God. That's that was the way the hunter showed up in that younger soul. Yeah, there was a typo in the first printing of my book where it said she was level 10. And then, I was talking to Oprah about it, and I said, and she was level three, and you know, then I had people, oh my God, I can't tell me how many people wrote to me, and they're going,
I bet,
yeah, you told Oprah she's level three, and then in your book you say she's level 10. I'll never trust anything.
I bet. Again.
And it was just like a typo.
Well, especially because you're talking about organized religion, which is such a lightning rod.
Oh, yeah. You know, certainly get that, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an interesting thing, too, about the system that I use. I've people, Christians, sometimes very right-wing Christians get, you know, pissed off about
it.
And
sure.
This is not a religion, you know, and there's no obligation to, you know, follow anything here. It's just teaching. So it's just an understanding.
Yeah.
So no, I'm trying to force anything. You don't like it.
Can I ask a quick question? How are you able to pinpoint, like, even just, is it just looking at me or somebody who is no longer alive, like Mother Teresa? I think you referred to Thomas Jefferson in your book. How are mm-hmm. you personally able to determine so easily people's soul ages and soul types?
I just have spirit guides to do that.
They just communicate it to you?
Yeah. So, in fact, the way I do it is in real time. In fact, my wife and I were just talking about this yesterday. You know, about, you know, there some people who are psychic, you know, they shoot from the hip. Right. And my feeling is sometimes they get it wrong because they're not. For me, I have to really, you know, it's almost like, give me the question, I'll interpret it, I'll ask my spirit guides, and then I'll wait for a response and then I'll give it back. So it's kind of in real time, but it's, and it's, it does take a little, you know, if you have, well, Maurice, you know, you have a session with me, you know, how I'll go, okay, give me a minute or two here and I'll talk to the guys. Then I'll come back, you know, and have a, you know, talk about the next subject. So that's kind of the way I work. So, you know, I checked in with my guides, you know, half an hour before this broadcast.
Oh, you did?
Just
about
to get
me?
A couple of things. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I didn't get, you know, a whole lot, but I mean, just a couple of things you might be interested in.
Yeah. Yeah. We would love to hear those things. And then I have a question for you about us older souls and what we should be doing in the current climate. But we would love to hear what you received before the broadcast.
Well, one thing I was thinking, Melissa, probably, I mean, you are going to have that very spiritual side. You're a spiritualist type and you're a very old soul. So you are going to have an interest in spirituality. Plus, you're going to want to create a better world and so on. You're here to learn. That is a major thing for this life. You're like almost like a lifelong student. It doesn't mean you won't become teacher as well. That's a big part of it, actually. It's the student teacher thing.
Right.
You're learning, but you need to get that out into the world, which is probably why you're doing this. There is a tendency to overthink that you probably, and that would be, I think, an understatement, right?
Yeah. Beyond.
Yes. So on the nose there, Ainsley.
Yeah,
it's chronic and it's not healthy.
I know it's a bit of a downside because what you choose are elements that's a thinker educator combination. It's chosen to make sure that you get, for example, an education beyond high school level.
Right.
And if you take the academic path, it's, you know, this is where you see people doing multiple degrees or a PhD or getting a master's and things because they love the just the whole process so much. But otherwise, it will be things like classes, workshops, seminars, teaching, podcasts, whatever, you know, just, but you need to be learning all the time.
I do, I get bored.
Absolutely. And that's a big thing about having, not only do you have a thinker in your soul types, but it's reinforced by this educator influence. And they're both very, very rational. And so, the fear of boredom is a really big thing for the thinker.
It is.
If you,
really
you see this, I see it a lot in my work where somebody's been doing a job for a while, and maybe the job's great or was when they first started, but the intellectually they've got everything they need from it. They've learned everything. So every time now they're going into work, that thinker part of them is just going, oh my God, get me out of here. This is so boring. And it throws out signs of boredom to try and get you to make a change. So that's why if you feel bored at work, you really need to stop, because that's where people, they say, oh God, the worst, they can have nervous breakdowns and things like that. You know, I've literally seen, I can think of two clients, one who got to a year to full retirement. The other one was 18 months to full retirement. Couldn't go in, couldn't do it anymore. Both of them very grateful that what they got from my spirit guides was permission to just quit.
Stop.
Now it's not going to get any better, you know?
Yes, Ainsley, that word permission is so valid. That's what it is. It's that permission from your soul, from your spirit guides, to do the thing you've been sensing but have a lot of fear around because of our conditioning in the world we live in. It's that permission you give people that I think is so transformative.
Yeah, I think that and validation.
Yes,
you know, because a lot of people I work with, they they're old souls. They're pretty intuitive. They kind of know, you know, deep down what they're here to do. And
I don't.
We should talk. I mean, part of what you're here to do is, well, because you're imparting knowledge is going to be a big part of it. Literally, what you're doing right here, right now, is consistent with who you are and why you're here.
Feels good.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my God, that's the sign. Isn't it
when it feels good? I always tell people, if it feels good, you're on purpose.
But yeah. I don't think a lot of people know when it feels good. And I think it's really hard to identify. I haven't felt this sensation that I have working on this podcast. I don't know if I've ever felt that in my life.
Yeah, maybe you just haven't found the thing that was... that you see, what you're looking for as a spiritualist, you need to feel you have a higher purpose. Here's the thing that unites both of you, by the way. It shows up in an area of your life plan called desires. It's a desire for immortality, which is not about living forever. Thank God, because most old souls would go, oh my God.
I would be mad.
I know. What a desire for immortality is, it's about wanting to leave a legacy or create a ripple effect or leave the world a better place for your having been here.
Yes.
And that unites both of you. I mean, most old souls will have some level of wanting to have meaning in their life, but that desire for immortality just turbocharges it. So you really want to affect other people and feel at the end of this life, yeah, really kind of
I made a difference.
I did good stuff.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. That's exactly right.
Ainsley, can I ask you, we were talking about the younger souls. We are in such a state right now in this country of division.
Yeah.
And I blame a lot of that division on the judgment that those on the left can convey to younger souls. So my question that I've been dying to ask you for a long time has been, how can those of us older souls who have a clear value system of love and connection and equity, how can we interact with or think about younger souls that can create more cohesion and healing?
Well, yes. It's a really hard one. But what I usually get from my spirit guides with questions like that is that it's like modeling yes. behavior, you know, just, you know, show what it is to be a kind, you know, spiritually oriented old soul. You know, walk the paths. I talk about this in my books about we're all here to walk. There's the spirit guides call them paths, goals, and core values, and they're the same things. What you do is you walk the path to achieve the goal, which then you embody the core value. So, like, you could be, for example, if you're working through self-expression issues, maybe from being persecuted in the past life, you're going to be walking the path of truth. And so it then becomes super important that you are speaking your truth and learning to confidently, you know, speak your mind. And it's just, you know, things like, a really great example is the truth, because it is so important to older souls. And you look at younger souls and all that's happening, you know, we've just had these terrible hurricanes in Florida.
Yeah.
And all the lies that are being propagated by younger souls for, you know, mostly political reasons. They're horrifying and they're having a human cost, to see, you know, you've probably been reading about.
Yeah.
And that horrifies old souls, because all old souls, whether it's the path of truth is one like you're specifically walking or not, you're walking all the paths. It's just some are more prominent than others, depending on what you're trying to heal from past lives. But so that it really offends old souls, you know, to hear these lies. And it's always what has always intrigued me is that how the younger souls do need to tell lies to attack the older souls, because there's not enough there. They can't really, you know, glom onto the truth because, you know, like that's not going to benefit them. So they have to make up stuff, you know, about, you know, immigrants eating cats and dogs or whatever, shit like that. Get people fired up. That's another thing about young souls. Sorry to go on about young souls, but they do tend to be, they respond more emotionally rather than logically.
Interesting.
Again, it's a lot to do with that guilelessness. So if they believe it's true, it's true. And it's more sentiment as well. You know, that's why they're so, you know, they're so much more concerned with the that sort of sentimental idea of the unborn child, for example, right? You know, it's like so desperately against abortion, but not doing absolutely bugger all for once the baby's born, it's like, right. Hey, you're on your own, you know.
Right. Or exactly. In their schools and they're not safe going to
school.
Yeah,
yes, absolutely.
Right.
You know, if you really care about
children's
babies,
lives.
Children, human life, and whatever, we'd have guns, you know, thrown in the East River, and you know, we'd create a, they'd all be working to create a more peaceful world.
Yeah. Ainsley, do younger souls collect together and older? So like, it's funny when Melissa was asking me her soul age, I thought, well, there's no way you're anything younger than a level 10 because we're best friends, you know? Yeah. So is that something that happens where soul ages tend to collect together?
Yeah. You get clusters. It could be spiritual homes. Sometimes that's a term that my guides use for a place that you've been to multiple times because you have a pocket of similar, well, soul family, basically. These are old souls. But these are souls that came into the world at the same time that you did, maybe several thousand years ago. And you bump into, you sort of constantly are, you know, weaving in and out of each other's lives and so on. So you want to be, the older the soul gets, the more it wants to be around older souls because you just relate to them. It gives you a sense of community. Right. And it can be hard, you know, when 90% of the population is younger than you.
Right.
Young souls want the same thing, but for slightly different reasons, because this is, you know, I talked about the draw of a mega church, for example, because young souls need to have their beliefs reinforced. And that, you know, like I was saying, then that becomes the truth, their truth, because, well, everybody else believes the same thing. Yeah. Older souls tend to be much more sort of thinking for themselves and much more sort of, you know, individual belief systems and so on. But the younger souls feel that sense of cohesion and community from being around people who are like-minded. And that's why they will, you know, if you're in a very young soul part of the world and, you know, maybe a very fundamentalist, you know, or something, and you're the old soul and you're talking about spirit guides and everything, the next thing, you know, you're probably going to have is people at your front door with flaming pitchforks, flaming torches and pitchforks or whatever, you know, because it's like, get out of here. We can't handle dissent. Because we aren't confident enough in who we are.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm trying to take this all neutrally, but I'm like getting overwhelmed even talking about it. And you are presenting it in such a neutral way. Like, this is just how it is. I'm going to shift the dialogue. Is that allowed? Can I shift it slightly?
It is your show.
Because I was getting like, I can't talk about Trump anymore. Last night and then again this morning attempted to do in your book, The Instruction, you discuss about a brief meditation you can do to attempt to interact. As I mentioned earlier, I am very skeptical, but I am so open and ready. So I sat down and I did the meditation that you said, and are you supposed to verbally communicate? Yes. I am ready for my, it was a sentence or two that you put in the book that was like, I encourage you to come show me my soul number and show me how to live my life accordingly. And I did it and nothing came. And I know that a lot of people have to struggle with this. And I am so interested in hearing and being open and understanding better and wanted to know what advice you give to people who struggle with getting deep enough to then hear the connection. I would kill for that connection.
Well, I think some of it is... Well, where do I begin? Intuition is one of the talents, you know, ability to, is one of the 10 talents, and it's like music or anything else. Right. And, you know, we have an idea that we have, for some reason, people would accept that, you know, if you have a talent for music, you're not going to play like Stevie Ray Vaughan the first time you pick up a guitar, you know, you're gonna have to practice and learn it. And people sometimes think with intuition that you got it or you don't. But no, you got a talent, but you have to develop it. That's what I always stress. I always tell people when I first started, you know, that back in the houseboat talking to my uncle. After that, I spent 3 years before I ever read anybody, just practicing every moment I could get, just talking to my guides about history, geography, anything.
Right.
to the point where they're going, are you ever going to do anything with this? You
know, they're like, leave us alone, Ainsley.
It's like, come on. It's like, exactly. We're getting
other
a little
people
bit.
People online.
Not another question about Mary Queen of Scots, please.
That Ainsley, by the way, is exactly what I would do. I would be asking about all of the historical figures.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, what is my purpose? Exactly. That's why they're like, we don't want to deal with you right now. You're too anxious.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, one of the things that, you should, when you're trying to do anything like this, there's some very, very important things. I mean, when you're trying to communicate with your spirit guides, inner tranquility, well, inner and outer tranquility.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes when we live lives that are very, very busy, most of us, you know, and noisy. And, you know, I mean, I live in a very tranquil part of the world in the Pacific Northwest. And, you know, but, you know, even I've noticed that sometimes I'd go out onto the deck to record a video or just have a meditation. And within 2 seconds, there's a plane flying overhead or there's somebody firing up a chainsaw or something. You know, even if we think we're sort of like in a fairly tranquil place, if you really think about it, you've got the noise of traffic or TV in the other room or whatever it might be. And it really is good if you can get some quiet space, you know, like a little sanctuary, even if it's just a corner in your bedroom or something. And do things like lighting a candle can really help. There's often associations with the monastery and past life spent as a contemplative. There's, you know, incense and candles. We sort of almost intuitively know that that helps to take us into the zone.
Right.
And then really, you know, meditation is the key. I think it was one of the reasons, well, I don't think, I know it's one of the reasons that the spirit guides chose me for this work was that I did have a meditation practice. And it really massively makes it so much easier to communicate. I would say before you put anything out to your spirit guides, that's when you want to maybe do 10, 15 minutes meditation, make sure everything is nice and calm. If it helps, you can sometimes play a little bit of soft music or something. But just finding what works for you. But then it's a learned skill, you know, so don't, it's not like, again, it's like you wouldn't just pick up the violin and go, this thing sounds horrible. You know, I'm no good at it. You know, you've got to work at it. So I would just encourage you to keep doing it. The thing about verbalizing questions, you know, I put this in my last book. I just love this story. I had a client who said she couldn't get through to her spirit guides. And she's going, I just don't think they're there. I don't think they're listening. And of course they are. It's all they're here to do is, you know, to help us. And so I said, are you writing down your questions as well as speaking them? She said, all I do is think them. And the response I got from the spirit guides was, it's hard enough being a spirit guide without being a mind reader as well. So
you need to say them out loud.
It really makes a difference. And write it down.
Write it down.
And then, journaling is really good for a number of reasons. Thinker educator. Yes, you need to journal because.
You're not the first person who's told me that.
Oh, no, because you've got so much stuff swirling around in your noggin. You need to get it down on paper. You know, bullet points, shopping lists, whatever. You get them down on paper, and then it'll make it so much easier for you to hear the voice of your guides.
Wow. That's a really great tool.
That is a great tool. And I've really been struggling to meditate. I think that might be part of my problem is my practice lately. I just cannot get there anymore. It's like been such a struggle lately. I used to be better at it than I am now.
Yeah. But writing can be a form of meditation. Sometimes I'll do a Q&A with my spirit guides. Ainsley, do you know what I mean? Where I'll just write down a question and then whatever answer comes to me, I'll get involved in that dialogue.
Yep, absolutely. And that's actually where if you write down the question, you should write down the answer whenever you get it.
Yes.
You know, as well. That's one way of validating that you are, you know, over time, you're able to look back on your notes and see all those times when you're so glad you listen to your intuition or the response you got from your guides was just so appropriate and you you're glad you acted on it. So it's just, it really helps with validation long term.
Ainsley, do our spirit guides ever get frustrated with us or mad like at us?
No, they have endless patience. And they, there's one thing. They're great with repetition. If you're manifesting something, let's say you want a soulmate, and you keep telling your spirit guides you want that, there's no problem. But if what I found was that if I asked the same question two or three times, you know, when they'd already told me, they would get to that point. They would just go, asked and answered. We're not going to do it again. I my little cheat around that is just I go, can I just confirm that this is the case? And then, yeah.
I'm getting your cheat sheet.
But yeah. Exactly. But you know, there is an energy exchange or something, you know, so they if they feel like, yeah, we've already done that, so let's move on. But it's not done in a sort of impatient way. It's just, I had somebody tell me they'd spoken to a psychic who said, I can't work with you. My spirit guides are too tired. And that's no.
Nuh-uh.
I said to my guides,
you don't get tired.
Do you ever get tired? And I go, no.
What's tired?
We're here 24/7. It's like we've nothing else to do but help people and those on the physical plane. And well, there's certainly the spirit guides I work with that they've lost all that sort of, or so much of that sort of human personality, I guess, you know, like, but right. they don't get irritated. And they also, what I found is that they're just endlessly compassionate, so that they really understand, beautiful. You know, they do know how hard it is for us being here and feeling a bit lost on the physical plane. Sometimes they've all been here, so they know how challenging it can be. So
they've all been embodied before.
Yeah.
All of us.
Yeah, they've all gone through the ones I work with have gone through the whole cycle of lives and then congregated together and come, you know, as almost like a group consciousness.
Okay.
And so they're very, very compassionate. You know, I found this with things like suicide. There's no, you know, blame or, you know, whatever. There's just nothing but compassion for anybody who does it for whatever reason. And so they're just all about love, not in a sort of gooey, sentimental way, but just, you know, very understanding, very compassionate, very, very caring and wanting the best for everyone.
Which is what you said level 10s are. Mm-hmm. So I guess after they advance from being embodied, they go on as a consciousness that is love and compassion and unity and all of these things that we
that's really feel. You know, it's a big part of what we're learning. You know, it's sometimes I get level 10 souls, you know, that are very old soul will say to me, well, if I'm such an old soul, how come I got so many fears and anxieties?
Yes.
Because they think that that's, you know, somehow you're going to be Yoda like or something as you get to late level 10. You kind of all Zen like and you've got it. But you actually, the veil becomes very thin as you get older and you tap into past life fears and your experiences. So an old soul can have a lot of anxieties. Doesn't mean they're all cool, calm, and Yoda like. But when you scratch beneath the surface, you find that they really have got it. You know, sometimes they go, oh, I think I'm almost like a new soul. I don't think I get it. But you do, because it's the old soul who really gets stuff like equality and love and just the importance of these higher values and actually, you know, in embodying as well.
Yeah. You know? Ainsley, when we want to put a request out to our spirit guides, is there, I've heard, you know, modern spirituality talk about don't say I want because it creates more wanting. Is there a way of putting the request out that is most effectively received by our spirit guides? Like, for example, I would like a best-selling book in March. How do you ask for that?
I have created a course, a manifestation course.
Oh, you have?
Yes, absolutely.
And where can people find that, by the way?
I'll just go to my website.
Awesome. And we'll include a link in our show notes, guys. So definitely. You can find it.
Fabulous, yeah.
Yeah.
So I talk a lot about manifestation, how it works. It's a spiritual thing. And the biggest thing about it is it's a collaboration with you and your spirit guides.
Yeah.
And so Yeah. I've heard this thing too. I've actually run it by my guides. Like if you say I want, or yeah. if you're looking for a soulmate and you say, I don't want anyone with addictions. Oh, somehow the soul is hearing addictions and it will bring that in. My spirit guide's take is we're not stupid. we get the gist. So really that sort of thing, I think, is just, I don't know, people trying to make it more difficult than it is. And because all you want to do is, I mean, I talk through it in the course, but you want to get really clear about what it is, as much as you possibly can, whatever you're asking for. And then putting it out to the spirit guides. But it's always like the significant third part of it is, what are you going to do to make it happen? I use this example all the time, and it just cracks me up still. After this is actually almost 20 years, I think, I had a client who said, when it came to manifestation, she had been told, if you want something, write it on a piece of paper, fold that piece of paper in half, put it in a drawer and forget all about it. And I what always cracked me up was my spirit guide's attitude towards that, which was like, they were like Victorian ladies clutching their pearls and swooning. It was like, oh my God. It was like, you know, how could anybody think that's going to work from their perspective? If you want something, you talk about it. You talk to not just your spirit guides, but you write about it. You talk to your friends about it. You know, it's like if you're looking for a soulmate, say, well, maybe you mention it to somebody and they go, oh, I got a friend who's single, you know, or whatever. Yes. You don't keep these things to yourself. Let the universe know what you're looking
to
achieve.
That's my problem. I keep it to myself.
Yeah. I mean, and good luck. You can keep that to yourself for a very long time.
Yeah, exactly. Where are all my manifestations?
So you need to be accountable to co-creating with your spirit guides.
That's it. It's a collaboration. And, you know, to just go, spirit guides, bring me this. I mean, they gave me an example the other day. Oh, yeah. So they've said for years, and I'd actually put it in the course, I've been saying it since I started working with them. If you take one step towards us, we'll take two steps towards you. And it's been years, and I thought, I never really asked exactly what you mean. And so it was only just a couple of months ago I had this conversation, and I said, so what exactly do you mean by that? And they said, well, let's say you're looking for a soulmate. And if you do, this is about commitment, because they say, if you say on January 1st, you're doing your New Year resolution, and you say, spirit guides, bring me a soulmate. And then you do absolutely nothing. You don't even think about it. And then it gets to October or something and you go, oh, I just noticed I haven't got a soulmate. So spirit guides, where's the soulmate? And they said this is not to be taken literally, but it's along the lines of, oh, we didn't think you were serious because you've shown no commitment action whatsoever.
Interesting.
And it's like anything. You know, I've used the example. I mean, I've you know, played music all my life. I played bass guitar in bands. And, you know, I'd get people coming up to me after a gig and saying, oh, you know, I want to play bass guitar too. And I go, oh, you know, really into bass. What kind of bass do you have? I don't have one. You know, that sort of thing. Or the person the person who showed me their bass and oh, yeah, I'm really into it. And it's like had two strings on it and covering the dust. You know, they're not exactly doing anything with it.
With it.
So you're not going to get a lot of support from the other side. So what they were basically getting at is that if you show commitment and you're sort of working on something, and even if it's just a request to the guides every day, but keeping the whole thing on the front burner is so important. They see that you're doing something to make this happen, even if all it is just requesting it every day.
Yeah.
You're at least, you know, keeping it on the front burner, like they say. So that, I think, is a really important thing about, you know, working with your spirit guides. Get really clear and talk to them about what you will do in exchange for the help. I wanted to stress that a friend of mine, I was talking to her, bless her, she thought it was like giving up cigarettes for Lent or something, like promising your guides. She said, well, if I promise my guides I won't watch TV for a month, does that work?
And it's bargaining, like, oh, right? It's bargaining.
Like, this is not, no, this is not like, it's not like that at all. It's like, what are you going to do? What's your part in making this happen? That's what they're talking about.
Ainsley, I could ask you 100 more questions. We're going to limit it to just a few more that are top of mind. You've brought up soulmates a lot. I think it's really important for people to understand, what is a soulmate exactly?
Okay. A soulmate is a soul, obviously, with whom you have an agreement. And it's a romantic agreement. So it's and we have multiple agreements. People have an idea there's just one soulmate.
Yeah.
But things don't always
everyone
work out.
Everyone hear
in the
that, listeners?
Plane.
Yeah, there's multiple. It's important.
It's, I think it's really important. Because I've had, yeah. I mean, I can think of somebody right now, a friend of mine, and she wouldn't leave her husband, who's fairly abusive. And, and you know, I was saying, well, why do you stick with him? Well, he's my soulmate. And I feel if I leave him, I'll never meet anybody. And I said, no, you have multiple agreements. Mm. And they're not fallback agreements by any means. It could be the next one could be a lot better and wow. so on. I think it's really good to know, because, you know, otherwise we feel, oh gosh, I've lost my you know, your partner dies and I've lost my soulmate and never find anybody. No, but we have different agreements being made. But for somebody to be a soulmate, they have to also be a member of your soul family. It's a big family. I mean, it's just thousands of souls. But
describe the soul family, which, by the way, my soulmate's at the door. The dog is scratching at the door, so I'm going to let her in. But yeah. Can you describe a soul family when you say that?
Absolutely. Well, I have a soulmate kitty, by the way.
You do. So you get it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Here she is.
So you came into this world with a bunch of souls at the same time, roughly same time, you know, I mean, over like, yeah, some period of time. But you all come in roughly around the same time. And then it's like a horse race. Off you go, like thousands. You scatter, you know, like all over the globe. You know, you've got one life in Iceland, the next in Australia, and the next one in Brazil. You know, it's like you're all over. But as the older the soul gets, the more you want to interact with members of your soul family, because it's a fast track to intimacy and deeper connection, because you actually have, you're going to be similar soul age and see the world in roughly same sort of way. So you can get to a deeper place, which is what most old souls would want. With a soulmate, a true soulmate, yeah, would have to be part of your soul family. Usually somebody you've known before, that you've interacted with before. It's not always the case. That's what my spirit guides would call an old friend. So,
you mean before, when you say before, you mean past lifetimes.
Past lives,
soul
yes,
family,
yes,
we've
yes.
shared multiple lifetimes with these souls.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. So, you know, and that will, you'll find in couples, I mean, I'm reading people every day, and, you know, most people, you know, most old souls seem to have found at some point, you know, that someone who's, you know, because of the agreement. So it's what the spirit guides are doing all the time. They call it the great game. It's helping us to meet each other. And
wow.
So the older the soul gets, the less likely they are to be random encounters. I mean,
beautiful.
You know, it doesn't
really?
Always work that way. I mean, I've had some relationships. Well, I mean, you know, I had one with somebody, you know, several years with somebody who I had no connection with. I mean, I was just low self-esteem, didn't know what I was doing. Mm. And, you know, and it was it was a horrible relationship in the end. There was no real connection. I was actually with a much younger soul too, which was very unpleasant.
That's,
but I've also had very toxic relationships with soulmates. You know,
right.
Just because you meet a soulmate does not mean that it's going to be all sweetness and light and like swans sailing off into the sunset.
Really?
It can bring up a whole lot. I know, sorry. But
well, because they're here to help us grow, right? Sometimes we grow through pain and discomfort.
Well, yes, it's not that. That's not necessarily the goal. That's the, because as the spirit guides say, the experience is not the lesson. The lesson is what you draw from the experience. And there's always a positive lesson, no matter how horrible the experience is. But we don't, in the main, say, "Oh, I'll come in and brutalize you because you need a lesson in this or
right.
something." It just happens. I mean, shit will find you on the shit happens, and stuff will find you on the physical plane.
Right.
You know, you don't need to set that up as part of any agreement. But it's always about, you know, how you deal with it as well. And you know, one of the things about spirit guides is that they're there to support you and protect you. you know, by giving you the guidance. And very often, I mean, I've often said this, my spirit guides have a very low threshold for abuse. They see abuse where we see bad manners, is what I say. Like, you know, they're very hypersensitive to that.
And because they want the very best for us.
That's right? It. So if you're in an abusive relationship, they can't support the relationship.
Right.
So
what do they do? Just watch?
They can support you and get the hell out of it. That would be usually, or dealing with it in whatever way. So yeah. Maybe, you know, support you in getting therapy or trying to work on it. But if that doesn't work, well, support you in getting out and finding something else, because none of us are supposed to sit in a relationship being abused.
Yes.
So they will, you know, if you are being abused and it's chronic particularly, then they're trying to get you to move. I mean, it's not always, I mean, I've created a course too on recovering from narcissistic abuse. I call it Healing the Wounded Empath. And it's my story is a big part of my experience until I met my current wife, Christine. I was never really free from narcissistic abuse. I mean, it was just like the theme of my life from childhood right through.
Right.
Everything that entails, you know, the bullying, the verbal abuse, the gaslighting, even violence.
Yeah.
And so I had so much of that. So my way of healing, as part of my healing process, is to create a course to help people recover from that.
Wow.
Horrible form of abuse. And so, you know, I a lot of people who are in toxic relationships stay in them way too long because they lose that connection to the voice of their guides or their soul. And they also, there's things like trauma bonding, and they get stuck in this, you know, my spirit guides would never blame somebody for staying too long in a relationship. People do that all the time.
Right.
Because we lose our free will, you know, when we're being manipulated and controlled and so on. We're not acting from, you know, we're here to use our free will, but we're not acting from that place. Anyway, I could go on about that one for days.
Fascinating. Well, and I really do believe we empaths attract narcissists. Right? I mean, it's the perfect match.
We do?
Isn't it? Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Yes, because you're putting other people's feelings. You're feeling other people's feelings, and you feel that you can fix them. And who wants that more than a narcissist who wants it to be all about them?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And the empath just keeps coming back. Maybe if I love them a little bit more. Maybe if I just do this, you know.
That's right.
Yeah.
Ainsley,
if you would like to have me back on the show sometime to talk about
that. Oh, my God. Can we do a part two times? And a part
Seriously.
Three and a part four?
I have like Ainsley, a jillion questions.
I know. You're endlessly fascinating. My last question for you is, do you know if this is your last lifetime embodied?
Most likely is. You can't tell for sure until you process on the astral plane, because it might be then you go, you know, there's something I still want to do. But no, this is probably it.
Wow.
And I'm very, very grateful.
Grateful.
I like being here. I like being here at this point in my life.
Yeah.
I think if I'd died before meeting my wife, Christine, I'd have gone, and somebody said on the other side, how was your life? I'd have gone, you know, it's a bit mediocre. I wouldn't recommend it. I give it like one star, you know. So it was, you know, my life has been, last 10 years with my wife has been
wow,
great.
Wow, what a lucky lady to be loved that way.
Oh, I absolutely adore her, but I have a feeling it's mutual. You know?
I have a feeling.
I bet.
Yeah, but we're sort of meant to be. Yes. So many, many things I'd love to talk to you about.
Well, Ainsley, you are truly such a gift to us human beings. I am so grateful that you chose this soul path in this lifetime to come and guide us. We are in a very, I think, dark place. Not that it's the darkest in history, but we need teachers and guides like you. And I'm really grateful that you have given your life over to service in the way that you have. And all of your teachings are so transformative. So thank you.
Thank you for saying that. But thank you for what you guys are doing as well. You know, there's something that I found about podcasters, by the way. And you guys are no different.
Oh, no.
Both of you are trying to heal in different ways, but to some extent, past life fear around rejection. You both have a fear of rejection that you're working on in this life. And one of the things you're doing as part of your healing is to create community. That's a very important thing, a very important part of what you do here. Because so many people who will be drawn to this will be in the same place. They maybe feel like a little bit of an outsider, like they're the old soul who doesn't fit into the young soul world. Their values are not the same as their neighbors or the family members or whatever. And what a great place to come and feel seen and heard and be around kindred spirits. So what you're doing, it's like, well, thank you. You know, it's wonderful.
Thank you. That means the world coming from you. Ainsley, lastly, where can people find you? We will link to your website where you have tons of tools, but where can people find you if they want to learn more about your work?
You can go to soulworld.com and learn all about my membership program, which is super affordable. We have loads and loads and loads and loads of things going on there. And actually, our theme right now, we're doing it over a couple of months, is communicating with spirit guides. So check it out.
I will check it out.
$27 a month. It's affordable for most people, and you get 2 weeks free. So you get nothing to lose by coming and checking this out. And if you go to ainsleymcleod.com, make sure you spell it right. That's my main site.
We will link to it so that they do. Do you still do readings as well?
I do readings, but I have a very, very long waiting list. I mean, it's about 3 years right now. So, but we get cancellations and
well, you got a little reading.
We'll see what we can do. Yeah. We'll talk. But
appreciate.
Yeah, but get on this, because sometimes we just have it can be like a sudden spot comes up in my schedule, or just go, anybody want to, like, are you available in 2 hours time?
Yeah.
And, it's first come, first served. I still do readings, but just there is a way.
In 3 years from now.
Ainsley, good luck, guys.
Thank you. You have been so generous with your time and your knowledge. Oh. We value and appreciate you. Guys, if you benefited from this episode, which there is no doubt you did, please share it with your friends and family. And Ainsley, we so look forward to inviting you back. Thank you for taking
I look time. Forward Absolutely. To it, too. Well, take care. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
This has been another episode of Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency. This podcast is co-hosted and produced by myself, Maury Fontanez, and Melissa Gushka, and is edited by our sound editor, Josie Barak. Stay tuned next week for another episode.